Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
We would like to thank Woodbine for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Woodbine's 2023 Thoroughbred Stakes program has more than $17 million in purses, including 39 graded stakes, 5 grade 1 events, and 2 $1 million classics, the King's Plate and the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine, now through December, great racing north of the border. Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. The week after, as it were, or the week before, the week in between. A week after the Derby, a week before the Preakness, and we'll talk a little bit about both of those over the next 50 minutes or so. A little bit later on, we'll be joined by Dave Grenig from the Daily Racing Forum. He was at the Derby last week, and so we'll talk a little Derby and maybe a little Preakness with him. But also, Dave, of course, covering New York racing. We'll talk the three stakes at Belmont this afternoon with Dave. But speaking of the Derby, down there covering for the Daily Gazette, our friend Mike McAdam. So I thought we'd get him on board. He's headed down to Baltimore next week to cover the Preakness as well. Mike, good morning.
Morning, Seth. Thanks for having me on, man.
Happy to have you on. And we were just talking when we were off the air because I was curious, and Anthony Mormino and I were talking about it as well. You know, the racing media landscape has changed so much over the last 20 years or so. I was curious and ask you, you know, what it was like, what the Kentucky Derby press box was like. And happily, you said there was a pretty good crowd in there on the weekend.
Well, I would say pretty good crowd relative to what I'm used to. I will say that the last time I was at the Derby was 10 years ago when Orb won it. And then the previous time, when Animal Kingdom won, they still had the gigantic press box up on the third floor or whatever it is. And if you've ever seen the Saturday Night Live skit where Costanza from Seinfeld, there's a skit where he has his own little personal space at the office where he can have quiet time, and it increasingly gets smaller and smaller. And the Derby press accommodation is kind of like that. It used to be in this gigantic room. Then when I was there for Animal Kingdom, it was on the ground floor in this windowless big room with carrels and no windows, but also a spillover auxiliary area. And now back this year, that auxiliary area is the entire press entire press room. So the room has been shrinking, but the room is still full. So I'd say there were a couple hundred people there. And then there was a photo room right next to it where that was all filled up, too. So I don't have a good number for you. I can just say that the space they reserved for us was filled to the gills.
No, that's good to hear, though, because, as I say, certainly the racing media has changed and shrunk over the past 20 years or so. So it's nice to see that the big race still gets a good crowd. And I'm curious, was there a good Japanese contingent there with the two Japanese runners?
The funny thing is, I mentioned this to somebody because I was kind of on the lookout for that. I remember at the Belmont that one year where there was the Japanese horse. I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but he scratched the morning of the race, and it was big news. There had to be like 20 media members from Japan there, which took up like a couple tables in there. And that was just for one horse. And I kind of was expecting to see more just because it's the Derby and there were multiple horses, but there were a lot of Japanese journalists there. I just kind of thought it would be a little more than what I saw. I mean, maybe I missed something. I don't know, but they were there for sure. I mean, they're very good about following their stuff, no matter where it is on the globe. So, but yeah, I kind of they were there. I just was a little. I thought there would be a little bit more.
And before we get to the race specifically, talk a little bit about, you know, being down there, being in the press box, mingling around with the crowd and whatnot. In the week leading up, and particularly the couple of days, the day and a half leading up, what was the buzz around the place in that it wound up to be such an unusual Derby with the number of scratches that pulls in all the also eligibles, and then the morning of the Derby, the favorite gets scratched. So what was the buzz around the building?
The weird thing was, you know, I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to go down there this year, and overall it was a really fun trip. I drove down with our friend Dean Kirshner from the Buffalo News, So I'm, you know, I'm all fired up to go to the Derby again. And then once we got there and the week progressed, it was like, what's going to happen next? It was so crazy. And things just kept happening. And you figure, finally we get to Saturday morning, and you're like, all right, the smoke is clear. Let's just get through this card and see what happens in the big race. Little did we know the best was yet to come when Forte scratches the morning, which we found out. We were literally on the shuttle bus looking at Twitter on our way to the track when we saw the news breaking that Forte was out. So you're like, okay, now it's over with, right? Now, and then as this past week shows you, no, we were never out of the woods with this Derby. It's still lingering, and you know, with the whole Forte story blowing up and developing in other weird, strange ways. So, the Derby is the Derby. It's amazing. I did the walkover, as I did the other previous few times I was there, and that was just, like, one of the most amazing experiences you can have as a journalist, a live sporting event. But the overall, you know, there's just so many clouds hanging over it and so many... You're in a constant state of readiness, like what's going to happen next, and something was bound to happen again. So that's kind of how it just kept going and going and going.
I was going to ask you later, but since we've touched on it, I'll ask you now. What do you make of the Forte situation and the fact that this situation with the hopeful was kind of an unknown for, 8 months? I find it mind-boggling.
Well, it was unknown to us until... The New York Times broke that story on Tuesday, but a lot of people knew what was going on, obviously, the principals involved. And, I was just transcribing a quote this morning. I had asked Mike Rapoli, the owner, the Thursday before the Derby. He had talked about going 0-37 in one of his early years at Saratoga where nothing went right. And I said, okay, you talked about a situation where nothing went right. Meanwhile, you look at Forte's campaign, and it looks like outside of losing to Sanford, everything has gone right. And I directly asked him, "Is this as close to a perfect, textbook scenario for a horse that you can imagine?" And the first thing he said was, "There's no perfect in this game." And how little did we know, how sort of prescient and revelatory that quote was, because by Tuesday, the perfect Forte, by Saturday morning of the Derby, of course, but the thing just blew up. It's the thing that's strange to me, and I was just reading reading the story this morning about how much procedural wrangling was going on behind the scenes, and I kind of don't blame the Rapoli Pletcher camp for trying to fight this thing, but it has echoes to Medina Spirit in a lot of ways because it's still being adjudicated, and who knows how long this thing is going to take to play out. I mean, Rapoli's very adamant about fighting this thing tooth and nail every step of the way. So this could be a story for who knows how long. As an illustration, if you can go on Equibase right now and pull up the official chart from the 2021 Derby, and it still has Medina Spirit listed as the winner, because the owner is still fighting it in court, even if, officially, Mandaloon has been handed the Derby for that year via the disqualification. So this Forte thing isn't going away anytime soon, and who knows what the final ending of it will be.
Yeah, as I say, though, it's mind-boggling that we all just kind of found out, the public just kind of found out about it recently, because it seems like that's a bad look for horse racing, and horse racing had to know that eventually this was going to come out, and so why not sooner rather than later? It's just a strange situation that, as you say, will continue to play out. Well, let's get back to the Derby, and we're going to pull up the replay here, and I'd love your thoughts on the race. I've talked about it a number of times. We're going to watch Mage get it done. Mage, the number 8. Two Fills is going to be the number 3. I liked Angel of Empire, the number 14. As they hit the far turn, Mage and Angel of Empire pretty much spent a lot of the race next to each other, and I think Mage just had the better position on the turn. He was a couple of paths further out, so Castellano just kind of floated out a little bit. And in the meantime, Angel of Empire, I think Flavien Prat was hoping things would open in front of him, so he waited a couple of strides before moving out as they came into the stretch. So by the time he did that, Mage had a couple of lengths on him. So I think Angel of Empire, again, I use the horse. I like the horse. I may be biased. I thought he ran well. Mage obviously runs well, winning the race. Two Fills ran his eyeballs out. And again, Two Fills is the number three horse. And we can see on the chicklets here, he's right up attending this fast pace. And he holds on for a very good second. So I'm going to point to all three. I thought were ran very well in the race. Mage comes up with a 105 buyer. What were your thoughts on this year's Kentucky Derby?
I did not use Two Fills or Angel of Empire in my superfecta. I had Tappa Trice on top. I know Two Fills is getting a lot of well-deserved love for how gutsy of an effort he ran, but moving forward, I like Angel of Empire better than him just by the way he was finishing that race. So if they're going against each other, well, Two Fills apparently is not running in the Preak. Neither of them are in the Preakness, so... we'll see if they hook up again in the Belmont. I don't know. But I really liked the race that Angel of Empire ran. Back to my pick, Tappa Trice. He was in last place of 18 early in the race. I thought he ran pretty well in the stretch and just had too much work to do. I'm going to look forward to betting him in the Belmont because I think just the way he runs and the extra, the mile and a half will probably play into his hands a little bit. He just kind of grinds it out like a freight train as long as he doesn't run into anybody. So I'm going to look forward to him. I know he finished seventh, but I like the way he was finishing that race, and maybe he can get a little better forward position in the Belmont and finish it off.
Yeah, being by Tappet, he is certainly going to take some attention in the Belmont Stakes. And we were talking earlier, and I talked this week on the radio with Steve Bick, talking about Two Fills. No surprise they're not going to the Preakness, given the way he ran and the being there with the pace early, being there late, that was a big race. And so that they're taking the Preakness off, no surprise. And we talked earlier on the Handicappers Report about all the buzz on stretching out the Triple Crown season and what that might mean. And certainly, again, there was a lot of buzz on social media. I'm wondering what your take is. I used to be a traditionalist. Now I could go either way. If they want to keep it, that's fine. But if they did all agree to stretch it out a little bit, I would have no argument against that. But I said earlier, a lot of people, when you read social media, say, no, keep it the way it is. It's supposed to be hard. I don't think it gets any easier if we stretch it out.
Yeah, I was watching you and Anthony earlier, and you're not going to like what I say.
Okay, all right.
I'm still in the traditionalist camp a little bit. I mean, if it's hard either way, shouldn't it be hard the way that is sort of the standard that you measure all the previous horses against? That's kind of my response to your very good point about, yeah, if you do stretch them out, it's still going to be a tough nut to crack either way if the fields are bigger. And I understand that the Belmont field size and quality is always going to be contingent upon whether a Triple Crown is on the line or not. But, I don't see that the Belmont fields really, I don't see how it'll change that much if you space them out a lot. Maybe I'm just, trying to back up a point that is getting older and older with each passing year. But I'm going to stay in the traditionalist camp for the time being, and just because I think you start moving the goalposts, it dilutes the, if somebody does accomplish this, all of a sudden you're introducing an asterisk, and I don't want to do that. I understand it's really important for somebody to pursue the Triple Crown, whether they get it or not, but it's supposed to be a rare thing. Not just a difficult thing, and that's sort of the mystique of it. So, and I don't want to mess with that. So, I guess that's kind of my position.
Yeah, as I say, I have no argument either way. I used to be in your camp, and now I can kind of see that I can make the argument to go in the other direction. I think some of the early Triple Crown winners had a different schedule, so I can make that point too.
Oh yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see how the discussion plays out. And I said earlier, it's also multi-layered because it's not just what the fans want or what the horses ask for in 2023. both the Maryland Jockey Club and the New York Racing Association would have to kind of come to agreements too to move things and decide whether that works for their business model. So that plays into it as well. Pulled up on your Twitter feed, and you mentioned it earlier, I pulled up some things you tweeted from Churchill last week, and one of those was the walkover. We have some video you took and put up on Twitter walking over with Tappet Trice. Talk a little bit about it. I mean, you kind of mentioned it before and what it means, and you can see people with their cameras also taking video, and it's just, it happens every day. It's an everyday occurrence where the horses have to come from the barns over to the front side, but for the Derby, it is a whole different animal, the walkover. So talk about the experience.
Well, first of all, the walkover for me this year was sort of like running in the Derby, because I wanted to follow my pick, Tappet Trice, who was the five, as you saw there in the video, but it took me a while to catch up to him. I had kind of a Tappet Trice Derby trip, because you get over there, they have like the staging area is the 7-furlong chute, and they bring all the horses in there and all the groups of owners. It's actually very crowded. You kind of pick the owners sort of like, peel off and stick with their horse, which I try to do too with Tappet Trice, but quickly the bottleneck was so thick I couldn't keep up the speed. My past performance line is going to say checked traffic, etc. And then finally I got some clear running room, and I actually literally jogged up the track a couple times just to catch back up. For a while there I was next to the 7, so I had to pick up a couple horses to get back up with Tappet Trice. But then once I did that and I was able to get some video and stuff, the experience is just as I remembered it, which is amazing. You're along the rail, and as the horses go by, the crowd roar just keeps building, and it's like this huge, like one-sided canyon of people and of course, the structure of Churchill itself. And, it really kind of gets the juices flowing just to hear the crowd, getting all amped up right before the race. And then we don't bother getting in. I didn't have a paddock pass anyway, so as soon as we got to the winner's circle and the horses ran, walked through the tunnel, I just stayed there on the rail and watched the race from the rail in the winner's circle like we do, for all the big races up at Saratoga. So it was good to get good positioning on the rail, even if I had lousy position early in my own personal little race there.
Yeah, and as they say, that you watch it every year, and it's just normally a mundane thing, but it's so big there. It was interesting to see your video, hear the take on it. I'll also pull up some videos. Speaking of the winner's circle, you had video of Cody's Wish in the winner's circle. And again, from a racing standpoint, it was a great race and a great performance. But again, the Cody's Wish story has been just so much fun to watch. What was it like in the winner's circle after that victory?
That race was like the port in the storm, because with everything happening with the horse deaths and the Forte story and all the scratches and everything, this was like the one race where not only the story is heartwarming just on its own merit, which is great, and you love the story, but then you have the added component of the horse is like really, really, really good, and he showed up and won. Now we went down to the winner's circle for that race because we wanted to see Cody's Wish, and then the whole Cody contingent showed up right next to us, and I kind of like moved out of the way because I didn't want to be glomming into the camera shots that which were there multiple, of course, with the various TV cameras and everything. So I was kind of like right next to it, and so the horse shows up, runs great, everyone goes nuts, comes back, and they do the post-race drill with Cody in his wheelchair there, and you're just like, okay, well, at least one really, really good thing happened this weekend amidst all this other, craziness. And looking forward to the horse moving forward, too, in the Met Mile is his logical next spot. So well, let's do it all over again, too.
Yeah, and, Bill Mott clearly recognizes the whole story around it, and he emphasizes that as well. It's just fun to watch the horse and have a good story like that. And as you say, then you add on, it's a really good horse that puts out great performances on the racetrack as well. Speaking of horses,
It's a fun story, even if the horse doesn't win, because they're probably bringing him over anyway to say hi to the kid. But the horse was dynamite. He won by 4+ lengths. So,
yeah, and he top runner in the game, and that just adds to the whole story. And speaking of horses, unfortunately, he finished 10th, but you tweeted out, I didn't realize Confidence Game has some local connections.
Yeah, Rob Slack is from Glens Falls and still lives in Lake George. And you know what? Since they're running the Preakness, I'll have to give Rob a call next week and just get caught up with him and get some of his post-Derby thoughts. I saw him briefly over in the 7 furlong shoot before the walkover, because obviously their whole group is going to follow their horse over. But they're supposed to run in the Preakness. The funny thing about that is they had the spotlight on them as the horse who's coming into the Derby off a 10-week layoff, which is highly unusual. And, you know, trainer Keith DeSormo said a lot of things about, well, we didn't want to stress him out by running in the like Louisiana Derby or whatever other spot was available after they won the Rebel. So they had hence the long layoff. Coming right back in 2 weeks and running into Preakness. So you're kind of getting two sides of the same coin a little bit. Rob is one of the co-managing partner of a group called Don't Tell My Wife Stables, which is a funny name and harkens back to some conference calls they had when they were first, a little ownership group kind of buying low-level horses. And every conference call would end with one guy saying, hey, you guys, don't tell my wife about this because she'll kill me if she knows I'm spending money on a racehorse. So the name is interesting, and it's very likable people. Small group of 8 friends, and now they got this really good horse who they want to have some fun with. It'd be great to see him up in the Travers at Saratoga.
Yeah, that's great. It is a nice horse, and hopefully better perform. You know, Keith DeSormo said after the race he was kind of blaming himself for the Derby, and it'd be interesting to see what he does next weekend. I'll also tout, I read your article, and you had some nice post-race comments from Castellano after the win in the Derby, after he had been... But 0-15, and you had a quote where he said, "Yeah, I'm sitting in the jocks room. I look up at the NBC broadcast, and they have the graphic that says 0-15." He said that was a little impetus for me to go out there and get a victory.
That was the money quote. Yeah, before the Derby, what I did was I wrote down the names of all 18 horses, and I just wrote notes next to each one of, okay, if this horse wins, what are you going to do with it? And next to Mage, I just wrote Javier Castellano. That's all I had to write, because if he wins, it's a hobby story for a lot of reasons. For our readership, obviously, he's New York-based. He's won 6 Travers. He's everybody loves him and knows him in New York. But he's had this humongous drought in the Derby. It's one big hole in his resume for a 45-year-old who's been doing it at a high level for a long time. So he was the no-brainer angle, and then we get into the post-race, and he comes out with the NBC quote, and I was like, okay, that's one of those thank you quotes where I don't really have to do any work now. I just have to let Javi say that, and that's pretty much the column right there. So, yeah, I'm sure it's a very popular victory in New York. I know Javi was right back at Belmont the next morning, and there's video, I think Naira posted it, of him coming out into the paddock before a race, and must have been getting a lot of cheers because he was waving to the whoever was there. Javi took care of me on Saturday by giving me a good, easy angle to tackle on deadline after the race.
Yeah, that's great. It's funny to hear that because, I mean, doing live like this, it's a little bit different. But back in the days where I had the TV production company and I would do interviews, taped interviews, that are kind of – have an analogy to a written piece like that. You'd do an interview and I'd be standing behind the camera asking questions. And yeah, every once in a while there'd be that quote where you'd go, okay, we're done. I've got my story now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
You call them thank you quotes because that's our reaction.
Yeah. I'm also curious, did you stop by? I asked Steve Bick the other day on the radio. I forgot to ask him when we were in here last week, but he gave raves. He said he stopped in the new clubhouse turn grandstand area, and he said it's a really nice facility, particularly on the bottom floor. Did you get a chance to stop by?
No, I didn't really get to do that. I mean, we did spend some time in the new paddock area, which still has a lot of work. It's still a work in progress. Right now it's just a big saddling ring with some AstroTurf in the middle. It's circular. Apparently they're going to dress it up a lot more and put actually some seating inside the paddock, which God knows what they're going to charge for those seats. I'm sure it'll be installed for the next Derby and priced accordingly. So, you know, the back area, it did have a different look for me than the last time I was there 10 years ago, because they've been doing some things. You know, they repaved the whole area behind the clubhouse. But, no, I didn't get to see any really of the other new stuff. We were at the Barnes Thursday morning, and then Friday we're just kind of like grinding away all day with the scratches and stuff. So I didn't give myself the grand tour of the place. But maybe next year.
Yeah,
no, we'll see what happens.
Completely understandable. You're running around working. But and finally, I just I pulled up a shot from your Twitter feed of the woman with the butterfly hat. And I pulled it up because, good for her, and it's a great hat. But I'm just curious because it's like over the top, I don't think, is understating it or overstating it. But it's fun. But I'm just wondering, as you walk around on Derby Day, how much of that, you know, up at Saratoga, women are wearing hats and they look great. In Traverse Day, there may be two or three that are kind of over the top. But I get the feeling on Derby Day, if you walked around Churchill Downs, you'd see quite a bit of this.
There's no such thing as over the top at the Derby. And it's one of the appealing things about it is, it's a great people-watching spot. Now, in the specific case of Madam Butterfly here, I give her a ton of credit because
Madam Butterfly, I love that. Yeah, Madam Butterfly.
As you can see from that photo, she's hoofing it through mud in that getup, and so she's not messing around. She's a trooper and a gamer. She literally walks the walk. So she got that whole getup together and went and walked through the mud did not like try to spare her costume from getting any mud on it. So credit to Madam Butterfly for sure. But yep. You could just stand in one place, anywhere, and someone's going to walk by within 5 seconds, dressed like that. Or these people really they go out of their way, and there's a commitment there. Let's put it that way. There's no such thing as over the top.
And you're right. I was giving her a lot of credit for walking on the track out there as well. But I like that. There is no over the top at the Kentucky Derby. Well said. Mike, appreciate the visit. And again, great work for the Daily Gazette. Folks can catch your work there. All the time, and catch you on Twitter as well. And next week down at the Preakness for nice coverage down there as well. So we'll look forward to that. But again, appreciate the conversation. We'll talk again.
Thanks a million for having me, Seth. We'll talk to you later.
Sounds good. Mike McAdam from the Daily Gazette. All right, we'll take a break. But before we do that, I do want to alert you to a couple of notes here. Gulfstream today, there is a mandatory in the Rainbow Six. So if you're a Rainbow Six player, Gulfstream Park, this afternoon has a mandatory. I didn't see what's in the pool. I think we're at one of those. Gulfstream has, I don't know whether it's like an official rule or an unwritten rule, but it seems like these days when they get up to a million, they'll go with a mandatory. And I think that's the situation here. So again, mandatory pay in the Rainbow at Gulfstream this afternoon. And again, mentioned it earlier, Monmouth Park opening up. I know a lot of people like Monmouth. Nice turf racing down, the fun racing, and very familiar names. All the familiar trainers have strings down there. All the familiar New York trainers, the big outfits, will have strings down there. You'd be familiar with the jockeys riding there as well. So Monmouth Park kicking off their 2023 meet a little bit later today. All right, we will take a break, and when we come back, we will be joined by Dave Grenig. Dave was also down at the Derby, so we'll get maybe some Derby and some early Preakness thoughts from Dave, and we'll also, more importantly, cover the three stakes this afternoon at Belmont Park. Nice stakes action this afternoon at Belmont. So all of that right after this. Stay tuned. It only takes one upset to make history, and now you can be part of Saratoga's long tradition at the Dark Horse Mercantile. The Dark Horse Mercantile offers a carefully curated selection of clothing, gifts, and home decor, from one-of-a-kind vintage racing memorabilia to select brands like Barber and Under Armour, as well as exclusive Dark Horse branded merchandise. So celebrate the Dark Horse in all of us at the Dark Horse Mercantile, downtown Saratoga, where the smart bet is always the Dark Horse. Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now. Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by Dave Grenig, the New York correspondent for the Daily Racing Forum. Albeit, he was in Louisville last week. He'll be in Baltimore next week. But we'll talk some New York Stakes action this afternoon with Dave. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. How are you doing?
Very good. Happy to have you on board to talk nice stakes card at Belmont, but we'll get some maybe some Derby and Preakness thoughts as well. But also, I wanted to start just with the New York budget getting passed the other day. It was good news for Naira with the loan being worked out for the changeup at Belmont. And before we went on the air this morning, the handicapper support, Anthony Mormino, and I were talking, and he mentioned, and I said, I don't think I've seen it. Is there like an artist's rendering of what the new Belmont would look like?
If there is, it hasn't been made public.
Okay. That's what I thought.
I think there's still some things to work out in terms of, you know, I think they have a guesstimate on what the size is going to be, but it's probably in somebody's drawer. I just haven't found my way to that drawer just yet.
No, I said I hadn't seen anything, and it like you said, it said probably still some things to work out and whatnot, but that'll certainly be front and center news over the next couple of years in New York with that change up coming. But the traditional Belmont Park underway over the past couple of weeks. And as I say, nice stakes action this afternoon. And let's jump in and take a look. The fifth race today is the Man of War, grade one event, $600,000, a mile and 3/8. This is a fun race, couple of 9-year-olds. And I went in that direction. I'm going to pull up a replay of the McKnight from January 28th. It'll be number 11, Red Knight, getting it done. That was two races back for Red Knight. Subsequently, a close-up second last time in the Elkhorn. But I'm going to go with the 9-year-old veteran on top over Warren Point, Charles Appleby for Godolphin. Obviously, you have to pay attention to those connections. But what were your thoughts in the Man of War?
Yeah, you're probably on the right two. I probably flipped it a little bit, even though the Warren Point will probably be favored just on the reputation of Charles Appleby, the presence of Frankie Dettori, who hasn't won a race at Belmont in 22 years. Of course, he's only had 10 mounts since he rode Fantastic Light to victory in the 2001 Breeders' Cup Turf. Yes, once upon a time, the Breeders' Cup was actually held at Belmont Park. Warren Point doesn't have that same profile of some of those Charlie Appleby runners that come out of Group 1s in England or Dubai, but he's got a pretty solid form, and he looks like he came out of a nice race in Qatar. That's had ample time to recover and certainly wants the distance. Red Knight, I actually liked him a little bit in the Breeders' Cup Turf last year. Not necessarily to win, but I thought to maybe blow up some exotics, and he just was not good at all. But he's come back, as you mentioned, with two good races this year. Just got beat ahead by Verstappen, who goes out from Brendan Walsh, who's also in this race. He's won 3 of 4. So some mix of those three probably gets it done. I don't know what to do with Soldier Rising. Of course, that was good enough to only be a length behind his stablemate Gufo last year, the Sword Dancer. Chris Clements-Clement mentioned that his trainer, that maybe the Aqueduct profile didn't fit his horse last year, and maybe those races aren't as bad as they look. He thought it was more speed favoring than it is. The thing is, I don't know where the speed from this race comes from. I guess Channelmaker likes to be forward, and I could see Warren Point just sort of tracking him, and, you know, it'd be kind of cool to see Channelmaker, another 9-year-old in the race, get it done. But, you know, I do think his best days are past.
Yeah, it's just fun to see a couple of veterans like that, a couple of 9-year-olds in there. And Appleby, does he have, like, stalls now permanently in New York? He is making it over and taking away some of the prizes fairly regularly over, what, like, the past year or so he's been making regular forays over here.
Yeah, no, he does. He ships in and out because the roster changes. You know, he won last week with Ottoman Street, Ottoman something. Those two came over with here, and then I'm sure he's going to have a different lineup for Belmont Stakes, the festival there with all the turf races, and then maybe even more so when we get to the end of July. I'm sorry, the end of the meet, early July, with the Belmont Derby, Belmont Oaks. And then I am told that he might have a handful of stalls at Saratoga, like he sort of did last year. Again, ship in and out. But I don't think he's going to, you know, everything he has here is in the quarantine barn, and I think they'll be kind of shipping back and forth.
Yeah, interesting. All right, let's move on to the Peter Pan Grade 3 event. A couple $100,000 up for grabs. Three-year-olds going the one-turn mile and an eighth down at Belmont. I went with Bishop's Bay, kind of master of the obvious here, but the Brad Cox runner, 2-for-2, pulled up the race at the fairgrounds back on March 19th. Bishop's Bay will be the number 3 horse. By all means, the 8-to-5, and if this horse starts to float down, this is not an invincible horse by any means, particularly being a little less seasoned than some of these. Classic Catch is interesting. Henry Q has I talked about it on the handicapping show earlier, has the interesting ownership group. Mick Cronin from UCLA and Rick Pitino amongst the owners, and Al Gold with Slip Mahoney. Won yesterday with Alice Cramden. Always love the names for Al's horses, but Slip Mahoney, I think, is playable as well. But I'm tilting towards Bishop's Bay, but just tilting towards it. What do you think in the Peter Pan?
Yeah, well, for Slip Mahoney, you'll have to play him at Monmouth if you want to play him today. He's going to run to the Long Branch Stakes down there. Bishop's Bay, I do like the draw, outside draw. He's a forward factor. He did stretch out comfortably. Overcame a little bit of a stumble going into the first turn. I think he clipped heels with another horse, but he bounced right back up and got right back into the race and was a stalking presence in each instance of his maiden win and his victory in the allowance race at Fairgrounds. He beat another Brad Cox-trained horse, and in the first race, he beat First Mission, who I could see being second or third choice in the Preakness next week. That horse came back and won a maiden and the Lexington. So he has run against some talented horses, mostly from his own barn. So I'm kind of in agreement with you. I know Classic Catch will take some money, and my first inclination off the Wood Memorial was, Classic Catch ran a pretty good race. He's the only one to close ground. The top four were pretty much in the top four in some order early on in the race, and this horse came from well out of it. My only thing with Classic Catch is I just wonder if he's fast enough to be effective at the 1 mile configuration as far as opposed to the two turns, which he's been best at. Of a horse that we haven't mentioned yet that I think is a little interesting, potentially at a price if you go with the favorite on top, is the rail horse Archangelo. He's a horse, an arrogant son of Arrogate, who has seemed to improve with each race. Does come off a mile maiden win off a bit of a layoff for Jenna Antonucci. You get Kentucky Derby winning rider Javier Castellano. The horse did ship up here with a good work with a good work over the track. So I thought Archangelo was a bit interesting, maybe to fill out underneath the top horse, where I'm with you on Bishop's Bay.
Yeah, the bullet workout was kind of intriguing to me for Archangelo. All right, let's move on to race number 9, the Run Happy Grade 3 event, $175,000, 6 furlongs the trip. I talked about this one on the handicapping show earlier. I went with Stage Left, and I was kind of surprised when I then handicapped and looked at the morning line. Longest price on the morning line, 6-to-1. But I'm going to be intrigued to see what we get by post time, if that'll hold up, because we're going to look at his last race. This is down at Laurel Park, the end of April, the King Leatherberry. This is a pretty nice win, got a nice number, a 99. And so I'm wondering if the price will hold up. It wasn't off the turfer, but it was a solid number. I'm intrigued. I'm tilting towards Stage Left. What are your thoughts on the Run Happy?
Yeah, I can't argue with you on Stage Left, because I like the horse outside of the Mr. Phil in my reasoning for Mr. Phil is I think he might be the fastest early horse in the race. I know there's some other horses that are forward factors, but I think he just might be faster. And if somebody does, I like where he's drawn outside. If someone like Twisted Ride does go to the lead, I think he could sit off the pace. He came off an 8-month layoff, beat Stage Left, and I just figured that he should move forward. Second start off the layoff, he should take a step forward. Rob Atras, his trainer, thought that the track at Aqueduct the day he won was kind of a demanding surface, and probably was fit, but maybe not fit enough to handle that surface fully, and probably got a little tired late and just held on against your horse, Stage Left. So I kind of like Mr. Phil second off the bench. I tell you, a horse I think will run better today, Candyman Rocket. If you draw a line through his last race, you might make him the favorite today. He had a 3-race winning streak, granted all at Gulfstream Park, but he was running very well, and he was into the race. I'm not exactly sure what happened in the count lead. I think he chased a very hot pace and just you know, backed out of it. And, you know, if you can draw a line through that race, I think he fits very well in here. I'll be interested to see how they bet that horse, too.
Yeah, and you make
six horses only, but it's a pretty solid race.
Yeah, you make a great point, though. I always say, don't judge a horse on one race, good or bad. And yeah, you take that race out of the mix, and Candyman Rocket, very playable. And I didn't use him in the mix, but I was kind of dubious of that decision. We'll see how it plays out this afternoon. All right, let's shift attention and get some thoughts on last week. I had Mike McAdam on earlier, and we were talking about his experience down there. I'll just talk before we talk specifics on the race and get your thoughts on what, as racing fans, and certainly I'm guessing from the racing media as well, the buzz must have been much the same. The last 48, 36 hours leading into the Derby was quite unusual, and then the favorite being scratched on the morning of the Derby. What was the buzz around the place?
Yeah, I mean, the whole Forte thing coming into the last, as you mentioned, 48 hours with, you know, he was dealing with something, obviously. Todd does not train his horses usually on the morning of the race, and usually would be a jog, not a gallop. And to see him gallop the horse at 7:45 on Saturday morning, you know, I do think he was doing that so that the vets could look at him and, you know, show him that, you know, this horse is fine. And, you know, to most people's eyes, he was, you know, except for one or a group of veterinarians from the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission, who decided not to let him run. My biggest disappointment from that situation is that they wouldn't comment on it either there or at any point in the day. And racing keeps trying to talk, use the word transparency. Yeah. And this is one of the least transparent industries in that I know of. And it, hopefully with HISA starting in a week or so, February, May 22nd, that changes. But, you know, that was disappointing. All the scratches leading up to it was also disappointing because there were some good horses that you wanted to see run. It's going to take its toll on the Preakness, too, because the three horses on the also eligible list were all probably looking at running the Preakness, yeah. And now they're not. So it was, you know, it was sort of kind of a disheartening, disappointing week there in Louisville, to be honest with you. Hats off to the winners and the connections, and especially Javier Castellano, who had been trying for almost 20 years to get that Derby, and he finally got it.
Yeah, and we'll show the stretch run now and just give us your thoughts on the Derby. I agree with you. I said earlier I had Angel of Empire, but I think – and he was sitting next to – he and Mays were kind of next to each other for most of the trip, but Castellano made a nice move top of the stretch. He was a little further out, so he just had to tilt out a little bit. I thought Flavien Prat waited a couple of strides before he moved out, so Mays had the jump. Big effort from Two Phil, certainly, and given the big effort, no surprise he's – taking a pass on the Preakness, but your thoughts on the overall performances? I thought the top three in the Derby were very good. Your thoughts on the Derby?
Yeah, I definitely agree with the top two. I did want to say I thought Jareth Loveberry gave Two Phils a terrific ride, and for his first Derby, acquitted himself quite well. I thought that horse ran extremely well and will be a player in races, probably not in the Triple Crown series. I don't necessarily think they're looking at running him a mile and a half. Next time I could be wrong, but you know, we might see him in Saratoga, Jim Dandy, Travers, one or both. And Javier Castellano learned a little bit from the first time he rode him in the Fountain View. This looks like the type of horse that you don't want to get stopped, that you're willing to you know, lose a little bit of ground if you have to just keep his momentum going. And I thought, you know, he looked like he had to ride him from about the five and a half all the way to the wire, and you wondered how much he would have left once he got to Two Phils, and he certainly did have enough left to get the job done. My knock on the horse going into the race was just that it was only going to be his fourth lifetime start. There have only been two horses, really, in 100 years that had won in their fourth lifetime start, and they were exceptional horses, Big Brown being one, Justify being the other, and I didn't necessarily put this horse on par with that. Maybe it's a combination of this horse not having to face some of the best, you know, not all the good horses after the scratches, but I don't want to take anything away from him. So I'm not going to go in with that mindset. We'll see how he does in Baltimore. But look, he ran a terrific race in the Fountain View, Florida Derby. Everyone pointed to Forte and the trouble he had. Well, this horse had even more so. So, you know, he ran back to that race and even better, which probably makes the connections of Forte feel even worse, having to miss the race. But kudos to Gustavo Delgado, his son, and the team that got this horse prepared for the race. Kudos to Larry Ravelli, Jareth Loveberry, and Two Phils, and really the rest of them. You know, I tell you, Disarm, Disarm coming back in 3 weeks and running a good fourth. That was a solid effort. And I'm sure Steve Asmussen and his connection have some real hard decisions to make, whether you run him back in the Preakness third race in 5 weeks and risk blowing your summer, or do you say, you know what, he'll be better served for a summer campaign if we don't run back. So I'm sure that decision's something that'll be made in the next 36 hours. And it'll be interesting to see which way they go.
Some decisions have been made, and we were talking before we went on the air, and you're headed down to Baltimore, and so I'll get some early Preakness thoughts, and some decisions have been made. You've written an article, Mage National Treasure, headed for the Preakness, but one I found very interesting, and I have the stretch run here to the Tessio back on April 15th. Shug sent this one down to Laurel and got it done. Number 7, Perform. And they elected to put up $150,000, a supplemental, to be eligible for the Preakness. I found that very intriguing. Some early thoughts from you on the Preakness.
I think I found it intriguing that they weren't willing to put up $600 or $6,000 in the first two deadlines. And, even though he hadn't necessarily shown a lot, he did have his maiden win, I think, done before the second deadline. So I was a little, you wonder what they really thought of this horse, if they wouldn't be willing to put up $6,000. But look, if you got $150,000 lying around, I guess why not put it up to run in the Preakness? But I think he's meeting a different caliber of horse in the Preakness. I also think what's going to be dramatically different from the Preakness that there was in the Derby is I don't see a whole lot of pace in the Preakness. And I think that makes a horse like Confidence Game a bit intriguing. Maybe just one of two horses out of the Derby that runs in the Preakness. And he did show some speed earlier in his season and was kind of chasing the hot pace in the Derby. I don't know that he's going to have a hot pace to have to chase in the Preakness if it stays the way it is. So I think Perform might be up against it because of his Red Route 1 because of their running styles. But I think that might throw a horse like Confidence Game, move him up the ladder in terms of your handicapping, just because, again, I don't see a ton of pace on paper in this race.
Do you have any thoughts? Talked about it with Mike McAdam and been talking about it, and obviously it was big on social media in the couple of days after the race. Do you have any thoughts on expanding the Triple Crown, on the calendar, expanding the Triple Crown season? And I said, I used to be a traditionalist. Now I could go either way. I see both arguments, move the Preakness to Memorial Day weekend and move maybe the Belmont to July 4th weekend. I get it. Mike McAdam earlier said he is a traditionalist. He likes the way it is. You have any thoughts one way or the other?
I've thought for years that the series should be changed, and I'm not even, we don't have to tie it to holidays. Just tie it to logic. If 4 weeks works for horsemen, then go 4 weeks, 4 weeks. And if it happens to fall on Memorial Day weekend, then so be it. If it doesn't, then so be it. If it happens to fall on July 4th weekend, so be it. If it doesn't, it's the last weekend in June, so be it. But just if you think the top 20 horses, if you think the best three-year-olds are in the Kentucky Derby, don't you want to see them again in the next step, in the next leg? And if 16 or 8, actually, if 21 of the 23 horses that were entered in the Preakness or in the Derby don't show up in the Preakness, that kind of says something to me. So I think you definitely need a better spacing from the Derby to the Preakness to make. And people say, "Well, they'll make the Triple Crown easier." No, just the opposite. It makes it harder. You're running against the better horses. The better horses were in the Derby, and you get what you're going to get in the Preakness. Here's the narrative. It's going to happen next week. Maybe if Mage wins the Preakness, well, he beat nothing. There wasn't anything in there. Would you say that if he beat the same horses in the Preakness that he beat in the Derby? No, it'd be tougher. If he does it again, if he did it 4 weeks from now, it would be a tougher race than it's going to be next weekend. So I'm in favor of changing.
Yeah, I'm as I say, I can go either way, but I'm kind of tilting more in that camp because, two fills, I have no argument with them skipping after having run his eyeballs out in the Derby. And these days, I mean, we would look at a conditional claiming horse. You're doing your handicapping. One of those horses comes back in a couple of weeks, and you think, boy, that's a pretty quick turnaround. I mean, it's not the way. It's kind of an anachronism these days, and so I'm kind of tilting towards maybe thinking it over too. But as I also said,
and the other thing about that, if I may just throw in, is the way the point system now is, by expanding some of the point system, is they want you. Churchill wants you to run more often at 3. So if you're running, say, 3 times leading up to the Derby, And then you're going to ask these guys to turn around 2 weeks in the Preakness. They're not going to do it unless they have Triple Crown stakes.
And I also said it's kind of a multi-layered thing as well, in that, you know, what the trainers want, the horses want, and whatnot. But also, we got to pull in the Maryland Jockey Club and NYRA. And is it a business decision for them to keep it where it is, as opposed to going later? And that is something that has to be answered as well.
Yeah, I mean, look, Pimlico basically runs a very small spring meet. In fact, I think after next weekend, I could be wrong on this. They change it all the time. They might be done. but you'll run it when it makes sense. And two more weeks later, I think, would make sense. And even if you got to the middle of June or end of June for the Belmont, we're still here at Belmont.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's not like you have to make extra time for it. Then, you know, does it impact a race like the Jim Dandy? Maybe. Does it impact a race like the Haskell? Maybe, but maybe somebody doesn't want to run a mile and a half, and they'll run a mile. Because, look, I don't have high hopes that the Belmont's going to be that exceptional field, and that might be more because of distance than timing, and I'm not necessarily in favor of messing around with the distances, but we might have to get to that too.
Yeah, interesting. As I say, it was a buzz on social media in the days following the Derby, kind of anticipating who's going to show up at the Preakness. So we'll see. Dave, always appreciate the conversation and some of the looks this afternoon at a nice card, nice stakes card at Belmont. I'll tell people again to follow your work, Daily Racing Form, the hard copy, and DRF.com, and we'll talk again.
Thanks, Seth. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Dave Grenig from the Daily Racing Form. Once again, I will alert you to information worth noting today. Gulfstream Park, mandatory pay in the Rainbow Six. So if you play the Rainbow, or if you're looking for the mandatories in those type of bets, it is a mandatory day down at Gulfstream. Monmouth opening day today, so keep that in mind. Monmouth's always a lot of fun. As I said earlier, familiar names, obviously, with some of the bigger outfits in New York, having strings down there. Jockeys we're familiar with. Good stakes action as the year progresses. We mentioned the Haskell just a moment ago, kind of the highlight coming up a little bit later on, obviously, in their meet. But they kick off today at Monmouth. All right, we will step back and wrap things up for a Saturday morning here on Racing Across America. But I'll be back in about an hour and a half or so to kick things off on OTB Live on a Saturday afternoon. Very much looking forward to that. Don't forget, I do want to alert you. I haven't checked today, and you can check. The Preakness Syndicate that opened yesterday, but it's a first come, first serve, and so potentially we may have wrapped things up there, but I'll check when we get off the air. You can go and check the website and see if the entry form is still open. But as I say, that if it is, it may wrap fairly soon. But keep in mind, next week here, a week from today, here at the Clubhouse Racebook, it's going to be a lot of fun. We have a Preakness Day bankroll. I'll be out in front. I believe 750 to play during the day on behalf of the bankroll team. So come to the clubhouse next week. Put your name in the hopper. The team will get selected, I think, about 2 o'clock next Saturday afternoon. I'll be playing on behalf of the team. Whatever the bankroll is at the end of the day gets split up amongst the team. Hopefully we knock it out of the park. That'll be the game plan. So that's one drawing. But also next Saturday, a second drawing at 4 o'clock next Saturday afternoon. We'll pick four people to have a $50 Preakness bet each. So again, you come in, you put your name in that hopper, and at the end of the day, maybe you wind up with a $50 Preakness bet. That'll be a lot of fun too. So a lot of opportunities to have a little extra fun next Saturday, week from today, at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue in Albany. Speaking of which, today there's a Easy Bet Fan Appreciation Day. Villa Valentes in Troy. Swing by this afternoon, and you potentially can enjoy the Fan Appreciation Day festivities with a little extra something as well, because typically there's some contests there, but there's food, there's vouchers, and always a lot of fun. Fan Appreciation Day. If you're a patron down in that direction, swing by this afternoon. Villa Valentes in Troy, Fan Appreciation Day. All right, that catches up on some of the promos and events here at Capital OTB. I'm Seth Merrill. This has been Racing Across America. Thanks for joining us. Always appreciate it. Tune in this afternoon for great racing action. And at about 12:30 or so, we will be back with a Saturday afternoon OTB Live. See you then. We would like to thank Woodbine for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Woodbine's 2023 Thoroughbred Stakes program has more than $17 million in purses, including 39 graded stakes, 5 grade 1 events, and 2 $1 million classics, the King's Plate and the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine, now through December, great racing north of the border.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.